Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, The Existence of God, Part 18. And for more information and resources, go to reasonablefaith.org.
Today, we're going to wrap up our discussion of the teleological argument, or the argument for design based upon the fine-tuning of the universe. Now, let's remember the big picture here. We're doing a survey of Christian doctrine. We're currently on the section dealing with the doctrine of God. We've looked at the attributes of God, and now we're doing an excursus, or a side journey, looking at natural theology, arguments for God's existence. We talked about the contingency argument of Leibniz for God's existence. We talked about the Kalam, cosmological argument for God's existence. And now we've been dealing with the teleological argument, or the argument for design for God's existence. And I've argued that the best explanation for the fine-tuning of the universe is neither physical necessity nor chance, but rather design. And so the design hypothesis will be the preferable explanation, unless it can be shown to be equally implausible as physical necessity or chance. And so that's what we want to conclude with, is what objection might be raised to the hypothesis of design as an explanation of the fine-tuning of the universe. Now, sometimes detractors of design will raise the objection that this argument leaves the designer himself unexplained. What caused the designer, or what designed him? In fact, this objection is what Richard Dawkins calls, and I quote, "the central argument of my book," end quote, namely the God delusion. The central argument of the God delusion is precisely this objection. And this is how Dawkins summarizes his argument. Number one, he says, one of the greatest challenges to the human intellect has been to explain how the complex, improbable appearance of design in the universe arises. So one of the biggest problems confronting is, how do you explain the undeniable appearance of design in the universe? Two, he says, the natural temptation is to attribute the appearance of design to actual design itself. The reason the universe appears to be designed is because it is designed. Three, he says, this temptation, however, is a false temptation, because the designer hypothesis immediately raises the larger question of who designed the designer. So he says, don't go down that road of saying the appearance of design is due to design, because then you're stuck with the question, who designed the designer? Number four, he says, the most ingenious and powerful explanation of the appearance of design is Darwinian evolution by natural selection. So the best explanation, he would say, of the design, or the appearance of design, is Darwinian evolution. Five, he admits, we don't have an equivalent explanation for physics. In other words, this Darwinian explanation only applies in the field of biology, but it doesn't apply in the field of physics, which is what we've been talking about. We've been talking about the fine-tuning of the universe, right? We did an end run around biology by going right back to the very initial conditions of the universe and asked, why are the physical constants and quantities fine-tuned for the existence of life within the inexplicable complexity and delicacy? And Dawkins admits in step five, we don't have any explanation for that in physics. Darwinism only explains biology and the appearance of design there. It says nothing about physics. Six, though, we should not give up the hope of a better explanation arising in physics, something as powerful as Darwinism is for biology. So six is kind of just an encouragement. Hold fast. Don't give up. We don't have an explanation in physics, but let's hold on. Let's hold out and hope that a better explanation can arise for the fine-tuning, which will be just as powerful as the argument in biology, as Darwinism is in biology. Conclusion, therefore, God almost certainly does not exist. Now, the conclusion of this argument is rather jarring, isn't it? Because it comes at you out of left field. There's nothing in those previous six statements that would lead to the conclusion that therefore God does not exist. There's no rule of logic that would allow you to derive that conclusion from those six statements. So at the very most, all that would follow from Dawkins' argument here about who designed the designer would be that you shouldn't infer the existence of God on the basis of the appearance of design in the universe. If the argument were entirely successful, if we conceded everything, that's the most that would follow, is that you shouldn't use a design argument like I've given as a basis for believing in God. But of course, that conclusion is quite compatible with God's existence. It doesn't follow from the failure of somebody's argument for God that therefore there is no God. It doesn't lead to atheism in any way. In fact, it doesn't even show belief in God is unjustified. Maybe we should believe in God on the basis of Leibniz's contingency argument, or maybe we should believe in God on the basis of the Kalam cosmological argument, or maybe on the basis of the moral argument, which we're going to discuss next in this class. The failure of the design argument doesn't show at all that belief in God is unjustified. In fact, maybe we shouldn't believe in God on the basis of arguments at all. Maybe we should just believe in God on the basis of revelation and the witness of the Holy Spirit, as some theologians think. So there's nothing here in this argument to show either that God does not exist, as Dawkins claims, or that belief in God is unjustified. And I think here we see Dawkins' lack of philosophical depth in this sort of argument. But why should we concede the truth of the premises in this argument? Is it true that his argument actually succeeds even in undermining the argument from fine-tuning for design? Well, I don't think so at all. You remember we saw that step five in the argument, which says that we don't have an explanation in physics, refers to the fine-tuning of the universe that we've been talking about. And Dawkins has nothing by way of a good explanation for the fine-tuning of the universe in either chance or necessity. And so the hope that he holds out in step six, let's hope that some explanation will arise, really that just represents the faith of a naturalist. It is just sort of naturalistic faith that eventually will have an explanation, but there isn't any real ground for it. So there's nothing here in the argument that would suggest that we have or hopes for or prospects for chance or necessity as a better explanation of the fine-tuning than the idea of an intelligent designer. Now, what about step three of the argument? That if you propound a design argument based on fine-tuning, that then you're going to be confronted with the problem, who designed the designer? Does that objection subvert the design argument? Well, I don't think so for at least two reasons. Let me share both of these with you. First, in order to recognize an explanation as the best, you don't need to have an explanation of the explanation. Let me repeat that. In order to show that some explanation is the best, you don't need to have an explanation of the explanation. This is an elementary point in the philosophy of science. For example, suppose some archaeologists were digging in the earth and they came across entities that looked for all the world like tomahawk heads and arrowheads and pottery shards. Now, they would be rational in inferring that these artifacts are not the result of the chance processes of sedimentation and metamorphosis, that these were in fact artifacts that are the product of intelligent design. And they would be rational in drawing that explanation or that conclusion as the best explanation, even if they had no explanation at all who these people were or where they came from. They might have no explanation at all of who these designers were, but clearly the best explanation for the arrowheads and the pottery shards is that they were the product of intelligent design. Or to take another illustration, imagine that astronauts landing on the moon were to discover on the dark side of the moon a pile of machinery. Now, they would be rational, inferring that the best explanation for this machinery is intelligent design, even if they had no idea at all who made this machinery or how it came to be there. Suppose they were able to determine it wasn't American-made, it wasn't Soviet-made. They don't have any idea who made this machinery or how it got there. Still, it would be obvious that this was the product of intelligent design. You don't need to be able to explain the explanation in order to recognize that the explanation is the best. In fact, when you think about it, demanding that in order to recognize an explanation as the best, you have to explain the explanation leads to an infinite regress of explanations. Because before you could recognize that the explanation is the best, you'd have to have an explanation of the explanation. But then you'd need an explanation of the explanation of the explanation. And then you'd need an explanation of the explanation of the explanation of the explanation. In other words, you'd launch on an infinite regress so that nothing could ever be explained and science would be destroyed. So the Dawkins principle would actually be destructive of science itself, which I think is ironic for a man who is a career scientist. So in order to recognize something as the best explanation, you don't have to have an explanation of the explanation. So with respect to the designer of the universe, we can just leave it an open question as to whether that designer has some explanation of its existence or not. That can be a subject for future inquiry. We can just leave that open and recognize that the best explanation of the fine-tuning is intelligent design. That's the first problem with his objection. Here's the second problem. Dawkins thinks that in the case of a divine designer, that is to say, if you say the designer of the cosmos is God, then he says God is less simple than the universe. God is just as complex as the thing to be explained. So you haven't made any advance in simplicity. You're positing a designer which is just as complex as the thing to be explained. So your explanation hasn't achieved an advance in simplicity. It's not any simpler than the phenomenon that you're trying to explain. Now, and therefore the conclusion is you shouldn't draw that inference because the thing that you're using to explain the universe is just as complex as the universe, so you shouldn't draw that inference. Well, now this objection again raises all sorts of interesting questions about the role of simplicity in scientific explanations. The fact is that simplicity is just one and not even the most important criterion that scientists use for assessing competing explanations. When scientists weigh rival hypotheses, simplicity is just one of the factors that they consider, and not even the most important. They will also consider things like explanatory power. How well does the explanation explain the phenomenon? They will consider explanatory scope. Does it have a wide range? Does it explain a lot of facts? Or does it have a very narrow explanatory scope? They'll consider plausibility and other sorts of factors. And it may be that in some cases, an explanation may be less simple, but it may have great explanatory scope, say, or great explanatory power, and therefore is actually the preferable explanation, even though it's less simple. So simplicity is not the only criterion that should be at work here, and not even the most important one. So, as I say, it raises all kinds of questions about that. But we can just leave that to the side because the objection is even more fundamentally flawed to that. So just put that to the side. The more fundamental mistake, I think, that Dawkins makes is his assumption that God is just as complex as the universe. He thinks that because God is able to have complex ideas and can do complex tasks, that means that God is just as complex as the universe. And that is plainly false. Think of what God is. God is an unembodied mind. He is like a soul without a body. He's an unembodied mind or consciousness. Therefore, he has no parts. He is not made up of pieces. A mind is a purely spiritual or mental entity, not composed of parts, and therefore remarkably simple. It's hard to conceive of anything that could be more simple than an unembodied mind. So certainly this mind may be entertaining complex ideas. For example, this mind may be thinking the infinitesimal calculus, and it may be able to do complex tasks like trace every particle trajectory in the universe. But the mind itself as an entity is a remarkably simple thing. Dawkins has obviously confused a mind's ideas with the mind itself. And that's clearly a confusion, because a mind could have simple ideas. It could be thinking, just say, of a patch of blue. Or it could have very complex ideas. It could be thinking of the calculus. And yet the mind itself is incredibly simple, having no parts. So he's obviously confused a mind's ideas with the mind itself. And while a mind's ideas may be complex, a mind, an unembodied mind, is a remarkably, incredibly simple entity. And therefore, postulating a divine mind behind the cosmos is definitely an advance in simplicity, for whatever that's worth. A single unembodied mind behind the universe is vastly more simple than the complex universe with all of its unexplained and variegated constants and quantities. So it seems to me that Dawkins' argument really shoots itself in the foot. In fact, when judged by simplicity, the hypothesis of a divine designer is definitely more simple than the universe, and certainly more than its rival hypotheses, such as the world ensemble. So, of the three alternatives that are before us, physical necessity, chance, or design, it seems to me that the best explanation of the fine-tuning of the cosmos for intelligent life is intelligent design. Joe?
Yes. When you read Dawkins or hear him speak, he employs two different things that I think defeat his own argument here that you've discussed. One, he does tend to be a believer in the multiverse, the world ensemble, which, like you said, lacks simplicity. A multiverse seems to be adding explanatory entities. And the second thing I wanted you to comment, he has said, well, I'd rather concede an alien race seeded the human race, sort of the panspermic idea, the possibility, rather than, you know, some disembodied mind, which again doesn't seem to get you towards simplicity either. It just pushes the question back. So
right, Joe is making a good point. In the movie Excelled, Dawkins says, if we are forced to say the fine-tuning is due to intelligent design, or really not the fine-tuning, say biological complexity, then the designer is some alien race somewhere in the universe that has seeded our planet for life, and they're the explanation. You're right, that doesn't represent an advance in simplicity, does it? Because that is even more complicated than the thing to be explained. And that's by contrast to a divine designer, which is just incredibly simple. In fact, although we didn't discuss it in our Attributes of God survey, simplicity is one of the classical attributes of God. It is one of the classical properties that God has said to bear is simplicity. So I think you're right on that, Joe. Yes.
Your analogy is great, and he's violating what he experiences with his own mind, with the mind's of everybody else, where you can envision very simple tasks or situations or very complex ones.
Exactly. It's incredible. I mean, when you're asleep and you're not dreaming, your mind isn't entertaining any complex ideas. But when you wake up, you can think of your math homework, or you can think of a business problem. And it's obvious that the mind is distinct from its thoughts, from its ideas. And yet he seems to conflate the two. Just unbelievable. All right, any other question on Dawkins' objections or on the fine-tuning argument in general? Yes.
Bill, do you see the objection that Dawkins raises, that the design argument would require that the designer that is part of your conclusion himself requires a designer? do you see that as parallel to the objection to the cosmological argument that the first cause would himself have to have a first cause?
It's only superficially similar, I think, George, because in the cosmological argument, if you can't have an infinite regress, you get back to an absolutely first cause. The cosmological argument demonstrates that there is a first uncaused cause, something that didn't come into being. In the design argument, technically speaking, the design argument doesn't get back to an undesigned designer. It just leaves it an open question. So in that sense, I think it's not analogous. It's different. The cosmological argument demonstrates a first uncaused cause, but the design argument doesn't demonstrate an undesigned designer. It simply demonstrates a transcendent designer beyond space and time who has established the laws of physics and all of the constants and quantities of the universe. But it leaves it an open question as to whether this designer has himself a cause or a designer. And I like that about the argument. It's modest. It's a modest argument. And it reminds us that these arguments are to be taken together in a cumulative case for theism. One argument will give you, say, an uncaused cause, but not its moral qualities. Another argument may give you its intelligent, but not its metaphysical necessity. Another argument may give you its moral properties, but not its being the uncaused cause of everything. So it's the arguments taken together, like a lawyer's case. It's the cumulative force of the evidence that leads us to the conviction that the theism is true. Yes?
I'm a little lost on why simplicity is such a necessary ingredient in the argument. I understand the application of science, but why not just make the argument that God is the most complex thing that ever existed, and therefore is so complex that it was entirely capable of doing everything to overcome the atheist objections?
Yeah, I think that it would be quite legitimate to infer to a more complex entity to explain the universe if that resulted in an increase in explanatory power, for example. The idea that simplicity is the criterion, the only criterion to judge theories, is just completely wrong-headed. I mean, think of it this way. The simplest explanation, in one sense, would be not to explain anything at all. Just take the phenomena as they are and offer no explanation. Then you don't have any additional level of complexity. But you want to have explanatory power. You want to explain where the fine-tuning came from. And if that's bought at the expense of postulating a complex entity, no problem. But I do think that it's ironic that even when you judge the argument by his own standards, as Joe pointed out, it caves in. Yes?
I think we need intelligent design back in the schools.
Excuse me?
I think we need intelligent design in the schools being taught.
Uh-huh.
And I think to get that, we need to show that the alien race is one possibility.
Yes.
And stuff. That's a different argument.
Yes.
And it puts it on equal footing, because I think it's important. Right now, the society is going crazy.
Yes, you're quite right that ID proponents are not being disingenuous when they say that the designer need not be God. It could be some other sort of reality. And if intelligent design is ever to get into public schools, which I think is highly unlikely myself, it would have to be on the basis of some sort of religiously neutral plank, I think, in that way. Well, now, we're out of time, but Marion has an argument map of the argument from fine-tuning to distribute. And you remember the way the argument map works is that you have in blue the positive assertion of the argument's proponents, and then you have in red, in the red box, the skeptic's response to the argument. And then you will see how you can respond to that red box in the blue boxes that follow. So in the argument map, if the arrows go down to another box of the same color, that is supporting evidence for that assertion. If the arrows go up from a box of a different color, that's an objection or a response to what went before. So before you leave today, be sure to get the argument map that Marion is handing out. Next class, we will turn to a moral argument for God's existence, in which I'll argue that God is the best explanation for objective moral values and duties in the world.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.